serious, running the game like I was born gearless. Deep a guy, I got the beat to leave them earless. Still I know that they still hear us, only rap we make an appearance. So I got shot, let it out, remain tearless, cause I'm careless. Doing it for the man, them in the hoodies and the new eras. Long rack on muffin, can't tell me nothing. Miss me with that huff and puffing, you ain't ready for buck and get stuck in. You're just doing a lot of chucking, I'm just doing a lot of talking. Are you sick or something? Are you sick or something? You should think of bucking. Fail around, don't think about, I'm blacked out and tinted out. It's amazing what you can achieve when you pull your finger out.
I will fight till I take my last breath, yeah. I get the heart.
Well, welcome today to the continuation of our Tenacious series. Who feels like fighting now? Getting ready, fit for the fight up in here. Anybody awake yet today? All right, two people in the front row. Anybody else? Hey, you know, our light dimmer changed, and now actually they're up because they don't dim anymore. And I like this because I can see if you're asleep in the middle of the message. So if you fall asleep, I might just jump down and wake you up. So for no other reason other than me jumping down and God speaking to you. Stay awake, all right? So today we are continuing our series called Tenacious, and we've been looking at how do we fight for what matters most. We said in the first couple of weeks that whenever we start fighting for what matters most, we'll stop fighting over what matters least. So much of our energy in life goes to things that really don't matter. We fight in our homes, we fight at our workplaces, we fight with our family members, we fight over insignificant things often that really do not matter. We waste our energy. And what we're learning through this series to do is to fight for our character. We looked in the first week, how do we fight for integrity? The second week, we talked about fighting for humility. And today, we're going to look at how do we fight for faithfulness. Now, whenever I hear that word faithful, it reminds me of a time when I was a 10-year-old boy and I played for the Livonia Orioles football team in Livonia, Michigan. We sucked. We were so bad. We lost every game for like 3 years in a row. We were really, really, really bad. And not only was the team bad, but I was bad. I was the worst player on the worst team of a elementary football team. So you can imagine how painful it was for my parents to watch it. And we had a horrible coach. His name was Mr. Archer. Mr. Archer, if you're watching this, you were a bad coach. Here's why. Because we had two teams. We had the starters, and then we had the practice squad. The practice squad never got in. Mr. Archer was one of those guys who was just a little bit too passionate about 9-year-old football. You know those parents I'm talking about? Like, they're fist fighting with another parent from another team. They're throwing their ball cap. They're screaming at the ref, and you're like, it's 5-year-old girl softball, or it's t-ball, man. Chill out a little bit. So Mr. Archer was like this. So he put me on the practice squad, and one day in practice, I played the nose tackle, which is the guy right across from the center. He's the dude that snaps the football. This is in case any of you don't know stuff about football. I just want to make sure you know enough. So one guy takes the ball and goes like that. The other guy gets it. He's standing like that with his hands under the cheeks. That's the quarterback. So the center snaps it. I'm on the other side, and I go straight through the line. I throw down the quarterback. I mean, it was unbelievable. I should have been a pro bowler. Thank you very much for that clap. So I throw him down, and I'm expecting Mr. Archer to, you know, celebrate. This is my moment of glory, and he starts walking towards me. I'm like, oh, yeah, this is good. This is going to be great. But he gets right to me, and he goes right past me. And he goes straight to the kid that let me through, and he's like, I cannot believe you let Andy Wood get through the line. Go sit on the bench for the rest of the day. Can a brother get some love? I'm like, come on. So now, several thousand dollars and counseling appointments later, I'm healed and I'm whole by the grace of Jesus. Mr. Archer, he was something else. So I would go home from practice, and I would cry, and I would whine, and I would say, Dad, I want to quit. I don't want to play football anymore. And I remember my dad saying, Andy, you don't have to play football next year, but you have to finish your commitment this year. Because in our family, we keep our commitments. And that so impacted me at a young age. This subject or this characteristic of faithfulness is one of the characteristics that's lost in our generation. If you go to Google and you search words, you can see which words were used more in the past and more now, or less in the past and less now. And faithfulness is one of those words over 100 years ago, it was used way more than it is used today in our society. And we have a tendency in our generation to give up far too easily. We give up on marriages too easily. We give up on friendship too easily. We give up on our churches too easily. We have a tendency to quit long before breakthrough, long before a life that truly honors and pleases God. So today we're looking at how do we cultivate greater levels of faithfulness in our lives. So here's a definition that we're going to go with today. This is what it means to be faithful. Faithfulness is to honor your commitments and beliefs even when it hurts. Do you know somebody like that? That they're the kind of person that even when it gets difficult at their place of work, they keep their commitments. They're the kind of man that in their home, even when there is tension and stress in the marriage, they stay true to their commitment and their vows. They're the kind of employee that when everything around them in their environment is changing, when there's moral decay, they still stand for what is true and virtuous. And we all know people like this. And since it's also Single Awareness Day, this is a characteristic that elevates you on the scale of meritability. Is that a word? If you're like, if you're capable of being meritability? I like that word. That's right. Okay. So if you want to be meritable, somebody who can be married, you want to be somebody that somebody wants to marry. Faithfulness helps with that too. So today we're going to look at how do we cultivate, not just for singles though, for married people as well. How do we cultivate greater levels of faithfulness in our lives? And we're going to go to Daniel chapter 6. I want to encourage you, if you have your Bible, you can turn there. And I want to go back to the context of what we're looking at throughout the course of this story. So we've been journeying through the life of Daniel in the Old Testament of the Bible, a man who truly fought for his character. He fought for integrity, for humility, and for faithfulness. We see Daniel show up on the scene about 600 years before Jesus. He's a part of a small, select group of people known as the exiles that are taken from Jerusalem over to Babylon, from the city of God, from the nation that God has established to be true and virtuous unto his ways, over to Babylon, to the most wicked city and nation on the planet. Daniel starts out underneath the leadership of Nebuchadnezzar. He's a part of this young group that they're trying to brainwash and bring into leadership in Babylon. Yet Daniel, in the midst of temptation and opportunity to walk away from God, stays true to his values and resolves at 15 years of age that he's going to honor God with his choices. And he keeps his commitments all throughout his life. So we looked in the first week at his resolve to be a man of integrity. Then we came last week and we looked at Daniel continuing underneath the leadership of Nebuchadnezzar to become known as a man of humility. And Nebuchadnezzar had been growing as this man of great arrogance and pride and narcissism, yet Daniel stayed true. And we're going to discover in Daniel chapter 6 a new story. See, Nebuchadnezzar and his family had continued to grow in pride. And God took Nebuchadnezzar out of leadership. Then his son Belshazzar raised up in leadership, was elevated in leadership, and very quickly came down because of his pride. And what happens is a foreign nation comes into Babylon and takes over. Babylon, which was modern-day Iraq, about 60 miles southwest of Baghdad, there's another nation, a group of people called the Medes and the Persians, who were from modern-day Iran. So it's as if the Iranians come in and take over from Iraq. Sometimes history just seems to repeat itself over and over and over again. So they come over and they take over Babylon. And the new king is a guy by the name of Darius. Now, the next 2 weeks, we're going to look at the same story in one chapter of the Bible. So you got to be here for both weeks. Now, the most famous story in all of the life of Daniel, you guys know what it is? It's Daniel in the den. Yes, thank you very much. Daniel in the lion's den. And if you grew up in church, there were little flannel graph boards, and you cut out lions, and you put them on a flannel graph board, and you got little cookies while you were doing it. And it's a famous story in the Bible that is often taught on. It's the climax in many ways of Daniel's life. But so often when we look at Daniel's story of going into the lion's den, we miss the story behind the story. And today is the story that precedes the moment when Daniel will be thrown into the lion's den. What we see today in Daniel chapter 6 is the reason why Daniel's life is going to be on the line next week. And to find out what happens, you have to come back. So I encourage you to be here. So Daniel chapter 6, there's a new king. He's a Mede or a Persian from the foreign land of the Persians. And he steps into leadership. And we pick up the story in Daniel chapter 6. It says, it pleased Darius right away as he becomes the king of this new land. It pleased Darius to appoint 100 satraps to rule all throughout the kingdom. So it's very similar to modern days. If a new president comes in this fall, or when a new president comes in, he or she is going to put into place a new cabinet. So Darius is putting into place 120 governors who will oversee the entire nation. It brings him great pleasure to be able to have the resources and authority to put people into place. It pleased Darius to appoint 120 satraps to rule throughout the entire kingdom with 3 administrators over them. This is good leadership right here. So he takes 3 people and he's going to put them overseeing the 120. He's only really going to have 3 direct reports. He's trying to simplify his life. He's trying to find people that were dependable, that he could count on. So he puts them into leadership. And it says that three administrators were over them, and one of whom was Daniel. The satraps were made accountable to them so that the king might not suffer loss. Now, I want you to imagine this for a second. Remember, where is Daniel from? He's from, you guys, wait, where is he from? He's from Israel. Where is he now? Babylon. Okay, Babylon, Israel. Who lives in Israel? Israelites, right? So Daniel is brought over to Babylon, and we see him elevated under Nebuchadnezzar to leadership. But then when the Babylonian Empire is thrown over by the Medes and the Persians, a new king comes in, and he's like, oh, let's just see who we can find. So he goes and he finds this Jewish guy, and he puts him into leadership. But at this point, Daniel's not a teenager. He's not 35 like last week. He's 80 years old. Now look around just for a second. Left and right, back. See any 80-year-olds around here? We don't have a whole lot of them at South Bay. I think maybe we have like 2 of them, and they're awesome. But have you ever noticed typically what happens, though, the older we get? Do we get more jolly or more happy, or do we get more joyful, or do we get more cantankerous the older that we get, just out of curiosity? Most 80-year-old people that you meet, they're not quite as pleasant as they might have been. Now, there are some that are really pleasant. My wife's grandmother, before she passed, she was 95, and she was the sweetest lady you would ever meet. But I know other old people that it's not like that for them. But Daniel's different. He has gone for 6.5 decades in the land of Babylon and under 3 different kings at this point, under 2 different governments. At this point, Daniel is elevated to a position of leadership in a foreign land, and now he's placed over 120 governors of the nation. You got to ask the question, what was it about Daniel that made him different? That as an Israelite in a foreign land, that the king would trust him. This fall, when a new president is elected, they're going to come in January of next year, and they're going to have a new cabinet. This would be like if Donald Trump became the president and he kept Obama's cabinet. You're like, I heard some boos. I don't know if it's for Obama or Trump, but it does not compute or make sense. And here is this guy, Darius, putting Daniel into leadership as an 80-year-old man. And I believe that the reason that Daniel is elevated and given so much authority is because this characteristic of faithfulness, which is so evident in his life. And I want us to see from this small passage of Scripture how Daniel was distinguished based upon character. And I want us to notice how we can become people who are known for faithfulness the same way that Daniel was. So watch as the story continues. It says, the satraps were made accountable to them so that the king might not suffer loss. Now Daniel so distinguished himself among the administrators and the satraps by his exceptional qualities that the king plan to set over him the entire kingdom. He's going to oversee the entire nation. But notice why he does it. It says that Daniel had so distinguished himself based upon his exceptional qualities. He was faithful. And the first characteristic I want us to see from Daniel's life is that people who are faithful stand out based upon character. They're the kind of people who stand out, point number one, based upon character. People who are faithful, when you get closer to their lives, what you see is character. Now, every single one of us are known for something. The people at our places of work, they're known when a name comes up or a face shows up. There's things or there are words that immediately drop into our mind or our heart about the people around us. Every workplace has different characters. In fact, you know, every place of work has that one guy that it doesn't matter what the occasion is, he is like or she is like a conversation's best friend. Do you know that person at your place of work? So you're going to the bathroom and she's there in the hallway when you're going to the bathroom. You're at the water fountain and he's there ready for a conversation. He wants to talk about the Super Bowl. He wants to talk about his kid's football game. He wants to talk about the GOP debates. He wants to find anything that he can to talk to you about and distract you. Anybody have somebody like that at your place of work? Chances are, if you can't think of that person at your place of work, you're that person, okay? Just wanted to make it clear. So I got a new strategy. In fact, since none of you are that person, let me share with you my strategy. I just put my headphones in when I go to the bathroom, and I just act like I'm on the phone, and nobody's going to talk to me that way. It works really good, because we have that person here on our staff, but I'm not going to tell you who it is. You have to come into our office sometime and see who talks to you and who ignores you, and you'll know who's the conversation's best friend. I'm going to let you guess, okay? My ADD, I just want to say it, but I'm not going to say it. So, but I'm not going to, I'm going to pick, all right. Anyways, my point, that all of us have something that we are known for. When your name comes up, there's an image, there are characteristics, there are values that you do or you don't have. Look at some of these pictures of people from Silicon Valley. Let's start out, number one, with Steve Jobs. I was going to be on the screen with Steve Jobs. That would have been really cool. But Steve Jobs, when you see his face, there's something that you, images that come to mind. What is he known for? iPhone, Apple. He's known for computers. He's known for taking over the world with technology. He has a reputation. Is it a good one or a bad one? How many say good? How many say bad? The people who work for Apple said good. The people who got fired by Apple said bad. All right. Who do we have next? Do you guys know who this is? Elon Musk. What is Elon Musk trying to do? He's trying to create all these electronic cars that none of us can afford. He's trying to put people on Mars. He has a reputation with his technology and Tesla and the company that he's created, and his reputation is growing here in Silicon Valley. He's a very innovative person. Let's look here. The third one is Larry Ellison. How many of you guys know who Larry Ellison is? A few of you. He has a reputation, and it's not a good one. Go look it up. He's got a reputation for firing people, for being angry. As soon as his image comes up for most tech employees, they know this is the CEO of Oracle, and he has a reputation. Let's go to some others that are different, that are more established. Abraham Lincoln, what's he known for? For fighting against slavery, for establishing equality among people. Next, we have Mother Teresa. Here's a picture of a woman who fought to bring people out of poverty in India, and her name, her picture, just calls to mind images and values. Last and certainly not least, we have Nelson Mandela. Here's a guy who fought against the apartheid to bring equality to South Africa and made a significant difference on the world. Here's my question for you. What are you going to be known for? What is the character reputation that you want to have said about your life when it is all said and done? If there was only one word that could be used to describe your life, what would you want that one word to be? See, so often we live so temporary, with such a temporary mindset about our lives that we think the here and now is all that matters. But every single one of us are going to come to that place where it's all said and done and it's over, and there are going to be words that are spoken about us at our funeral, and we get with our choices to shape what those words are going to be. And Daniel is standing out based upon character. His life over six decades have been shaped to the point that he is distinguished with exceptional qualities. It's kind of like these two chairs here. If I were to ask you which of these two chairs you'd like to sit in, chances are that this chair looks like it'd be a little bit better, right? It's more colorful, looks more comfortable. But this chair over here, man, this thing will hurt your butt. It's metal, it's cold, and the longer you sit in it, the more uncomfortable you get. You're trying to find that spot of comfort, but it's not there. But this one right here, it's actually a few screws short of a chair. And when you put your weight on it, it's not very dependable. See, people who are faithful don't always stand out initially. But over the course of time, with Daniel, 6.5 decades of faithfulness, they start to stand out, and they stand out based upon their dependability, not based upon how colorful they are. And we want to become the kind of people that the closer somebody gets to us, the more they see character of faithfulness. The more they get to know you and your decisions and your words and your choices, what do people see? Do they see a colorful chair that when it's time to depend upon it, there's not a whole lot of steadiness? Or do they see somebody that when times get difficult, they keep their commitments, they stay true to their values, even when it hurts? Proverbs 25:19 says it like this: like a decaying tooth or a broken tooth or a lame foot is reliance upon the unfaithful in times of trouble. I was chewing on some granola one time and I cracked a tooth right in the middle. You guys ever cracked a tooth before? It's painful. I'm really bad with oral hygiene. I'll go to the dentist. I'm like, I'm coming twice a year. I'm not flossing. I'll brush twice a day, but fix me when I'm here. It's kind of like some people are with church, right? It's like, I'm going to come twice a year, figure out all my problems, and then I'll be out. I'll be back again. But I'll go to the dentist. And so anyways, I broke my tooth chewing on some granola. And for the next few months until I went into the dentist's office, every time I'd chew on something, I'd had to put it in one side of the mouth. And I avoided this one spot because I had a broken tooth. That's what Solomon is saying, that a lack of faithfulness is like in our lives. We have people that we know when it's time to depend upon them, when pressure is put on, they're not faithful. So it's like chewing without a tooth, or it's like walking with a lame foot. We don't want to be that person. We want to be the kind of person that is known and stands out for our character. And here's how Daniel does this. Says afterwards that he so distinguished himself based upon his exceptional qualities that the king planned to set over him the entire kingdom. And at this, the administrators and the satraps tried to find grounds for charges against Daniel in his conduct of government affairs, but they were unable to do so. They could find no corruption in him because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent. For 80 years. I mean, think about that for a second. All of the conversations and all of the decisions and all of the responsibilities that had been placed upon Daniel. Daniel had interpreted dream after dream after dream for kings. He had been in positions of leadership. He had had relationships and friendships. And for 80 years of his life, his character was so solid that there was nothing that these jealous men could place on him, because he was faithful. And the second characteristic I want us to see of Daniel's life and for us to live faithful lives is this: that people who are faithful care about small stuff. See, they realize, faithful people understand that it's the accumulation of the small stuff that adds up to a life of faithfulness. I remember couple years back. Now, I need to make this disclaimer. For me, attentiveness to small stuff is really hard. I've been ADD my entire life. There are some people that are real detailed, they're real precise. I'm not one of those, okay? I married one of those, but I'm not one of those. And it's been one of the biggest challenges for me. And one time I'm hanging out with our staff, and I realized that I was making some choices that was negatively affecting their ability to respect me for my character. So David, who is on the front row in this service, he's our family pastor, and he has a Toyota Highlander. And what is it?
Forerunner.
Don't mess up the Highlander and Forerunner. He has a See, look, details. He's better at details than me. Thank God. So he has a Forerunner, and we went on a staff retreat, and for some reason, this was a season of my life where I was eating corn nuts. Anybody like corn nuts? Yeah, all right, man. Get them with a Slim Jim and a Slurpee while they're on sale at 7-Eleven. So I got some corn nuts, and we're traveling back, and we got back to the church building, got out of David's car, and I didn't think anything of it. And on Monday morning, David walks into my office, and he's like, hey, bro, let me share something with you. On Saturday, I spent like half of my day cleaning up your corn nuts off the back of my car in the seat. It was everywhere. You just got up and you left your mess for me to clean up. And it makes it difficult for me to respect you as a leader when you can't even pick up your corn nuts off my seat. So can you do something about this? And it was one of those conversations where you like want to punch him in the face on one side, but then on the other side, there's a tremendous level of gratitude in your heart. And God used that conversation to help me see that I was leaving a trail in so many ways, and that trail that I would leave was diminishing the respect that people around me would have for me. And every single one of us, your character leaves a trail. Everywhere you go, you leave a trail. And the question is, what kind of trail are we leaving? Our choices, our words, our commitments, our interactions, our corn nuts, they all are leaving a trail. And the question is, when you step off the scene, what trail did you leave? People who are faithful, they care about the small stuff. Jesus said, if you are faithful with little, you'll be faithful with much. Sometimes we want God to give us more. We want God to give us more influence. We want God to give us more money. We want a promotion at our job, but we're not faithful with what's been placed into our hands right now. I wonder what are those small details that you've been neglecting. A life of character, a life of faithfulness is the accumulation of the small, insignificant stuff that seems oftentimes that it doesn't matter. But in reality, the details do matter. The details of your character and your choices with your words and when you tell your children that you're going to take them out and you're going to play sports with them or you're going to spend time with them, whether or not you fulfill that commitment truly does matter. The conversations that you have on a business trip when nobody's around and you're lingering at the bar afterwards, that conversation does matter. The work ethic that you bring to the table with your coworkers and your employees, it does matter. The way you fill out your tax reports, it does matter. All of those details matter to God, and He sees every single one of them, and He wants to cultivate in you and I a life of faithfulness. But He says, focus on the small, seemingly insignificant details of your life and honor me with them, and I will give you more. Where does God want you to give your attention to the small stuff? Words, attitudes, choices, commitments, values that maybe you've been neglecting and He's bringing to the forefront. What's one small thing that you can give your attention to this week? So Daniel gives his attention to the details. There's nothing that they can pin on him. Now imagine, if you will, the story and the jealousy that these 120 satraps and the other two men who are administrators over the kingdom feel because Daniel, the Israelite, has been placed into leadership, and they are looking and they are searching. They are knocking on every door. They're opening every closet. They're searching through every text. They're looking at every picture on his phone. They are trying to figure out anything that they can about his life, and he has not left any detail of his life and his character undone. Exceptional in faithfulness. And I want the same to be said of us as a church and us individually. But there's one last characteristic I want us to see as we wrap up our time together today. Not only was there no corruption in them, but finally, they get to a point where here's their whole goal. They want to overthrow Daniel from his position of leadership. That's where we're going to find the lion's den next week. And they are trying to find any detail that they can to get him taken out of his position of leadership. And it says, finally, these men said, we will never find any basis for charges against this man, Daniel, unless it has something to do with the law of his God. And we're going to see in the subsequent verses of the story that what happens is that they're going to go to the king to get the law changed so that it's illegal for Daniel to worship his God. That means that it was easier to change the law than to get Daniel to compromise. That's how faithful this man was. They understood that the only way they could pin something on Daniel is if it related to the law of his God. And the last point I'd like for us to see from this story is that people who live faithful lives live from a higher sense of purpose. That's what inspires faithfulness in relationships. That's what leads to faithfulness at our places of work. That's what leads to faithfulness with our words and our choices. It's when we get a bigger picture of what our lives can become. I love this quote from Pastor Craig Rochelle. He says this, people will work for a what, but they will give their lives for a why. Remember that definition of faithfulness. It's being true to your commitments even when it hurts. And people who have a bigger vision, a bigger why, will persevere through difficulty even when it's challenging and most people would give up. They'll stay true to that commitment. See, when you look at your life, your job, your relationships, the way that you go about handling your finances, there is a part of how life operates and it's what you do. You're a teacher, what you do is you teach kids. You're a construction worker, what you do is you build buildings. You are an engineer, what you do is you build software and you build hardware. There's the what of your career, there's the what of your life, but behind the what is a why. And every what that we do in our lives, if it's connected to a why, there is a greater sense of purpose and there is a greater sense of passion that fills our work and fills our relationships. And Daniel understood with his life that at the end it wasn't Nebuchadnezzar, it wasn't Belshazzar or Darius that he reported to. He understood that ultimately he reported to God, to the king of the universe, and at the end of it all, he was going to stand accountable before God for every choice that he made, everything that was placed into his hands. So consequently, he pursued faithfulness out of this higher vision and a higher purpose for his life. We have a lot of folks like this at South Bay Church, hundreds of them. I think of Lana, who's on the camera right now in our 11:30 a.m. service at North San Jose. She doesn't like to be publicly recognized, but it's too late. Lana is faithful. She operates the camera. She works backstage. She does whatever it takes to share the message of love, of Jesus' love, with people who are far from his heart, to help people take next steps in their journey. And she doesn't just work on a camera, she does it for a higher purpose and a higher vision. I think about a guy by the name of Danny Snell at our South San Jose campus, which is launching in 2 weeks. And Danny Snell is a part of the setup and teardown team. And every Sunday morning, he's there, 6:45, 7 a.m. He's pushing out carts, he's unloading pipe and drape, he's putting it all out, seats and screens so that people can see and hear the message of Jesus so that they can worship God. He's rolling carts down to Bay Kids' rooms so that there are mats for little babies to be laid out and to crawl and for there to be life poured into them. He's doing all of this not simply for a what, but he's doing it for a why. because he's able to connect the dots that if he takes his gifts and his talents and he uses them, that he's partnering with God to see the grace of God flow into people's lives and people transform. I think of people who serve in Bake Kids. I think of Widodo over here, who has been serving in Bake Kids for several years now, multiple different campuses, who every Sunday you see him. If you've gone through the Bake Kids rooms, you see he's a little bit crazy. He's got a lot of energy and a lot of passion. But he realizes that he's laying a foundation in the lives of future generations, that one day children will have that foundation and they're going to walk with God because he was a little bit crazy in front of them in Bay Kids. I think about Melanie Young, who serves on this campus with First Impressions. On Saturday nights when it's really dark and she's got this wand and she's waving people to their seats and she's welcoming every guest as they come in. And then on Sunday morning, she serves in Bay Kids and she invests in children's lives and she writes them notes to all the kids to wish them happy birthday. Many times, did you know that Melanie will be traveling overseas with work and she will travel to get home for the weekend because she has such a big why or a vision for her life that she'll sacrifice even when it's difficult because she knows that she's partnering with God to see people's lives transformed for all of eternity. When you and I get that kind of picture, it inspires faithfulness. And the reality is, every area of your life, it's coming to a close at some point. And those of you who are young, married right now, and you're still in that honeymoon phase, and the twinkle's in your eye, and you're so in love, there's going to be difficult seasons in years to come. And then there's going to be a day when we get older, and we're starting to wrinkle, and we're looking across the table, and when you look across the table into the eyes of your spouse after 6 decades of marriage, you will either have been faithful or faithless or unfaithful in that relationship. And when I can frame the day-to-day decisions from the end, and I can realize that it's not just being pure sexually that matters the what, it's not just choosing to not commit an affair, it's more than that. It's a picture and a vision of the kind of marriage that God has called me to have. It's the same with parenting. Your small children are going to grow up. I think about my little daughter, Karis, who's 2 years old. And she's going to walk down an aisle someday. There's going to be some punk trying to become her spouse, and he'll never be good enough. But it's coming. That day will come. And the little stuff, the accumulation of the Starbucks dates on Friday mornings with her, they matter. The faithfulness over the long haul. Some of us give up far too easily on marriage, on friendship, on parenting, on our work, on our ministry. And some of the greatest gains that God gives to our life come after decades of faithfulness, of doing the right things over and over and over and over again. Today matters so much more in light of the future, 10 years down the road from now. The choices that you and I are making today are accumulating. And the question is, are we going to live from that higher sense of purpose? Could you imagine how that would change your life? If you really came to your relationships, if you really came at your marriage, or you really engaged with parenting from this angle of looking at it, of what it will one day become. If you looked at your sexual purity, singles, through the lens of the fact that one day you're gonna want to get married, and you're gonna look into the eyes of somebody and say, I do. And there's gonna be a trail of relationships behind you. And that purity, those choices on Valentine's 2016, really are gonna add up to that moment. Now, if we're honest with each other, oftentimes I think we all feel a whole lot more like this stool than this one over here. I see my inconsistencies. I see the times when I make commitments and I don't follow through. I see how often I fail in terms of faithfulness. And I look at guys like Daniel, and I realize I have so far to go to become one who is steady like Daniel was. But in reality, what produces faithfulness, more than our energy or working or trying harder, the question is, where is your life ultimately rooted? And one of the primary words that is used to describe the character and nature of God, there are words like love and mercy and justice and holiness. But there's another word that's used to describe the character and nature of God, and that word is faithful. And all throughout Scripture, from eternity in the past to eternity in the future, God has been described as one who is faithful. Isaiah 26 says that he is the rock of all ages. He's faithful through divorce. He's faithful through loss. He's faithful in those moments when we want to give up and we want to throw in the towel. He is faithful. And today, really, whether or not you or I are going to be faithful is a question of where our lives are anchored. And you can put your weight on him and you can trust that he will carry you and he will sustain you. And the only way ultimately that you and I are going to live a faithful life is if our lives are truly anchored and rooted in the faithfulness of God. And Jesus is the ultimate example of this. Philippians chapter 2 says, we should be just like Jesus, who being the very nature of God, did not consider equality with God something to be grasped, but he made himself nothing. He humbled himself, and he took the very nature of a servant, and he became obedient all the way to obedience on the death of a cross, where his arms would be stretched out wide for the sins of humanity, and he would exemplify faithfulness to the point that he would give his life. He would be faithful to his commitments and to his beliefs all the way to the end, so that you and I can be restored to the heart of God. And based upon his faithfulness, you and I, his faithlessness, and people who lack faithfulness in our lives can be reconnected to God, and he can restore us and give us the strength to live lives that honor him in the small stuff, the seemingly insignificant stuff that adds up to a life of true faithfulness. Where's your life anchored today? Is it in the faithfulness of God? He's inviting you to come. He's saying, come, place your trust in me and let me sustain your life and carry you forward. Jesus, we thank you today that you are faithful, that in difficult times you can be relied upon, and that today you want to strengthen us and carry us, and you want to lead us to that place where we truly live lives that honor you in faithfulness. I pray that you would help us connect these moments in the here and now to the ultimate of what you have for our lives, that we would be people who honor you in the small details, that we would be the kind of people that live from a higher purpose, and we stand out based upon our character. And Jesus, thank you that it's based on your grace and your mercy that we can be known as people who are truly faithful. Thank you for your faithfulness. It's in your name we pray. Amen.
Amen. Thanks, Pastor.